welcome to another new episode of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, I'm your host, Tyler, joined by Matt. And today we bring in a special guest, a guest that many of you have heard on this podcast multiple times. He is the only man that we could go to in such a chaotic season to try to sort out how these last 6 weeks are going to go. Stu Ledecky from Busting Brackets. Thanks for joining us, Stu.
Thanks for having me on. This is number three, moving up.
I think it might be number four.
Number four?
This is at least. I know you've got to be the all-time record holder in guest appearances on the three.
I'm trying to gain some breathing room. Yeah, this might be
number four. I will have to check, but I am almost certain that this indeed is the solo record. I believe it was you and Jeremiah Bonsu who were both at three appearances apiece with a host of people.
To do battle. he's a worthy opponent.
I'd say so.
So we brought in Stu today to try to tackle, as I said, the chaos that has just taken over the league here. Admittedly, this weekend felt slightly less chaotic than the rest of the conference season so far. For the most part, the favorites took care of business. But regardless, we need to try to sort out how these last 6 weeks are going to go. So we're going to play a game of 10 questions. We have each come up with a few of the questions that we feel like the answers will dictate the remainder of this season. So, Stu, since you are the guest, why don't you start us off? What is one of your three major questions for the final 6 weeks?
My first question I want to lead off with is, in lieu of a somewhat disappointing start to the season, do you trust Mark Schmidt to get this Bonnies team a double bye in D.C.?
All right, I'll start things off here. You know what? Now I have a Bonnies related question too, but I'll save it because it is. You know what? No, let's. I'll just throw it in here. Mine was going to be: do we believe that the Bonnies can get back to the paint dominant Bonnies of last year at a full time rate? Mm-hmm. We saw it the whole VCU game. We saw it the second half Saturday against St. Joe's. Can they do that? I don't know, 7 out of 9 games, something like that. So I'll merge that with your question. But to answer yours, I absolutely think they're getting a double bye. I'm more thinking about them in the conversation of, can they still keep themselves in the top two? Mm-hmm. Even if this team throws out the occasional stinker, I don't see them really going any worse than 12-6. And that should be enough for fourth at worst.
I feel like the way people talk about St. Bonaventure, it's almost as if I just don't think the situation in Olean or Allegheny or wherever you visited last weekend, Tyler, I don't think it's as bad as we all think. They're 4-2 in the conference still. So they're not in that bad of shape. This is going to be a really big week coming up where they have Davidson at home and then go at Richmond. So a pair of really tough games. And then looking down the schedule, they also still have trips at St. Louis and VCU. So probably one of the most challenging schedules remaining. But I think a double bye is still a fair expectation. I'd be pretty surprised if they didn't get to at least 12-10 wins. Although it does seem like the ceiling has been lowered a bit where I don't know if they can win the conference either.
Fair enough, yeah. I think part of my logic in asking was not just that they've been slightly less than what we've thought, but also some teams have started, like a clear top of the conference is starting to take form, where Dayton and VCU both look probably better than most people thought. Davidson's pretty much a lock at this point for one of the double byes. It's hard to see them falling to 5. So those are three teams right there, and then you have St. Louis is looking good, probably better than the Bonnies are right now at this exact point in time. But then kind of my logic was, well, then do you take Mark Schmidt to figure it out, you know, because there's still plenty of time left. But it's just funny that, like, going into the season, everyone had Bonnies 1, and if you didn't, you probably had Richmond 1. And now it's possible, I won't say likely, but it's possible that neither of those teams even get a double bye.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Definitely nobody had Davidson number 1. I know we all didn't. So
I think I had them like 7 or something.
Yeah, so they, and that's going to be a huge game too. I know St. Bonaventure beat Davidson twice last year, so we'll see. I mean, that would be a big step in the right direction. But I think going to your part of the question, Tyler, I actually thought that was very interesting, and I had something typed up in my notes that was a little bit similar. But I saw a good tweet from our friend Petey Buckets, who pointed out that this year St. Bonaventure has been a much less paint-oriented team. In particular, guys like Kyle Lofton and Jalen Attaway are not getting to the rim as much as last year. They're taking a lot more jump shots. And in general, I think you can look at that and say that it's hurt the Bonnies' overall offensive production, because their three-point shooting has dropped off quite a bit. They're only around 32% on the season, on pretty low attempts too. So if they're not getting it inside, they're not really scoring effectively. And I think that's a good point, Tyler, where they do need to get back to what made them such a great team last year, just attacking the basket.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about it more from the perspective of both sides of the ball. Mm-hmm. Now, the defense as a whole has just been not as good as last year, and we've talked about that extensively. The three-point, two-point, and free-throw percentage numbers for opponents are all worse this year than they were last season. But the two-point percentage number, which was the most impressive last season, is still the closest. And so that's still been the strength of their defense. They're still doing decently well guarding the two-point shot most of the time. But the big exception is still that Dayton game, where they basically got torn apart in the paint. So they got to clean that up. They just didn't have games like that last year. And then even George Mason, Aduro went 5 for 9, lower attempts than normal, but still pretty efficient. So they got to clean that up, like I said. Offensively, we started to see a little bit in the St. Joe's game. They took 7 threes. That's more of what they were doing last year. So I think there is kind of a cognizance there, but there was still more mid-rangers than layups compared to what we were seeing.
Yeah, I think our questions go hand in hand too, because it's – if you think they're still going to get a double bye, you probably think they're going to start playing more to their strengths, which is getting fouled and not just taking J's all the time. So if they are going to get a double bye, my answer to your question is yes. And because I do think I trust Mark Schmidt to get them back to where they're meant to be. So I'll go with yes to your question. They will figure out how to play more physical, how to dominate the paint more.
Just crazy too. I'm looking back. I know this isn't quite the double bye threshold, but St. Bonaventure hasn't finished below fifth place since 2015, which is just an incredible run of consistency. So I think that alone makes me feel like there's no way they fall to like 500 or anything like that in conference, even though, you know, it is going to be difficult with teams like Dayton, St. Louis looming, even George Mason, who I want to talk about a bit later. Like, they're a team that could threaten.
Yeah, they look good. Four.
Yeah, so.
I mean, our defense makes a lot of teams look good, but they look good all around.
Yeah.
Because I knew they were solid going into this game, but I thought, like, all right, I think we can figure out a way to win by three, you know. But we just got worked. I mean, it ended up being 10 points, but for a while, I think it got up to 24 for a minute there, so. I'm a believer in Mason. I was probably higher on most people going into the year, but they've looked – I won't pretend I thought they would be this good either.
Yeah, especially offensively. I mean, maybe playing against UMass, like, that's a way for teams to get right sometimes.
Yeah,
but still.
It can be both. Yeah, it's not mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
And, Matt, real quick, off of your point that Bonaventure continues to finish in the top five, shout out, first of all, to the people who put together the St. Bonaventure giveaway guide. We've seen a lot of teams in the conference, Duquesne, start really slacking on that in the past few years. The Bonaventure one that they give out at the Riley Center is fantastic. And there was a gem of a stat in there. Over the past seven seasons, the top five teams in the A-10, according to win percentage, in order, Dayton, number one, followed by VCU, then Bonaventure, Davidson, and Rhode Island. And I'll tell you what, that feels incredibly correct. Those are the five teams that have more or less just kind of owned the last decade in this conference.
Yeah, no surprise inclusions there. Those are the five I would expect to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for the most part, those are the five that we see good top half of the league consistency from every year too, or at least 8-9 consistency in bad years.
The ones where when you're doing your preseason rankings, like, you have to really think twice if you don't have one of them top half, even if it's like a down roster year. They just kind of like, there's a culture with those teams where it's like, it's hard to, like, they'll probably figure something out. You know, I probably shouldn't have them bottom half like I did with Rhodey this year, but I mean, that could still go either way, but usually it's a risky. Yeah.
Rhodey's the one that could potentially slip out of this group because this is a heavily Hurley weighted stat to this point still, but
very true. You guys want to ask one of your questions?
Yeah, I think it's on to Matt.
All right, yeah, I can jump into another top team this year. I want to go over to VCU, and I think this has been really interesting because he got off to what I would say was a bit of a slow start, but if you ask me, Vince Williams is the player of the year in the A-10 right now if you're just going off conference play.
If you ask Ken Pom, he says that too.
Yeah, yep. I mean, just look at his box scores from the conference. He's averaging 16-7, 4.5 assists. So he's in the top, I think top 12 in each of those stats in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Shooting a sizzling 51% from three, which has actually vaulted VCU to first in three-point percentage, unless that changed in the last couple of days in the A-10. I guess my question is, we know VCU isn't going to ever turn into a great offensive team this year, but is Vince Williams' production sustainable enough? Or, well, let me put it this way. He's not going to finish shooting 51%, or at least I really doubt it. But can VCU keep this up where they're an average offensive team, and can that keep them as a top two team by the time we get to the end of the season?
I think they can. I just think their play style and their culture just creates that when they create so much offense from defensive opportunities. I don't see their intensity letting up. It's like they're the type of team where if it was just about like talent or ceiling on the roster, like they'd be screwed with the people they lost in the offseason. But just the way they play just enables them to find consistency because they're never going to take a night off. And I don't want to say that's rare in this league, but they're coming with it harder than most of the teams in this league are on any given night. So I think they will keep finding a way to do it.
To me, I'd almost ask a sub question that I think dictates that whole thing. And that is, can Vince Williams be the guy for the full 2.5 months? We saw him do it all throughout January. We saw him do it in the early part of the non-conference last year where he shot the ball really, really well like he is at the moment. But we haven't seen him sustain it at this level so far. And if you tell me that he finishes the year first team all A-10 because of his offense and not just solely his defense, then I would assume that VCU's offense absolutely stays where it is, which right now is basically dead average in the league. Personally, I think it's – I don't want to give a half answer here, but I think it's almost kind of a yes and no. He's sure as hell better than the guy we saw in the non-con, but I think it dips a little bit. And I'm not sure he's even at this point a guy that you can rely on as a number one option. But I think if Ace continues to grow into February, then if Vince Williams takes a 10% drop in production – he's an awesome, awesome number two to have.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really see him going much lower than that.
Yeah, he doesn't need to be A-10 player of the year for them to do what they want to do. But it's, of course, a great benefit if he is. Like, one of my questions was, who's your current first team? I didn't have who's your player of the year, but I think he probably has the strongest case because he's the guy on – I mean, you can say Davidson's slightly better, even though VCU just beat them at home, but he's more the guy for them than, you know, because you could pick any one of three for Davidson. So he's the choice for VCU. So he probably is player of the year right now.
Yeah, when I saw that on KenPom where it shows you the all-conference team from their analytics, I mean, I haven't been on the podcast for a couple weeks. I've kind of been living under a rock in terms of watching A-10. But I was surprised when I saw that. I'm like, I got to dig into this. Like, what is Vince Williams doing? And yeah, just looking at what he's done, what VCU as a team has done, I mean, you know, they've had a couple 70-point games. They destroyed LaSalle a couple weeks ago and got the 85, which I never thought that would happen. 84 the next game against GW, too.
Yeah.
But it's not just Williams, too. I mean, Tyler, like you mentioned, Ace Baldwin's return. He's had a couple big games. Definitely an improvement at point guard since he came back from his injury. Another guy, too, Marcus Sahonis, who's shooting 48% from three in conference play.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of the year, I wasn't very confident in what he would bring to VCU. Seemed like he just forced a lot of threes. I felt like he was just hitting the backboard on half of his shots and they weren't even close. But now he's really dialed it in. And yeah, the fact that they've got a couple reliable shooters right now, that makes them really tough to beat with the defense you know you're going to get every night.
Mm-hmm. For a while, it was like I think they had the number two defense in the country, but like the 240th offense or something like that. So it was like, seeing them play UMass will be really interesting because it's basically flipped, but now I'm pretty confident that they'll destroy us because now their offense is way better than that, but their defense is still up there. So
that's actually something else I wanted to talk about with VCU real quick, because right now they're, I think, in the top, like they're 56th in the net or something around that. They really don't have that many great opportunities to build their resume up. The only Q2 or Q1 games they have left are at George Mason and at St. Louis. And they also get Dayton at home, which is one spot away from being Q2. But other than that, it's pretty much just avoiding landmines for the Rams. And looking through their schedule, I feel like that UMass game is probably where they could be the most susceptible, just because, and it's the same thing I tweeted out earlier today, but UMass feels like the most dangerous landmine possible because any given night they could just make 15 threes, and it's really hard to beat when that happens, especially when that'll be at the Mullen Center. So
yeah,
that's another key too. VCU just needs to avoid landmines.
Yeah, if that was at VCU, I would say no chance, but we played decently well at home. Mm-hmm. So if the team hasn't totally been lost by then, yeah, that could definitely be a trap game for VCU.
Yeah.
No, I want to throw out, too, I think home for Bonaventure ends up as a Q2.
It could. The net hates the Bonnies this year, though. It's weird, honestly. I haven't figured that one out. But you could be right.
Yeah, and for me, I think they're the exact team that doesn't step on the landmine. I think even if the UMass game happens to be the one where their offense just plays like garbage and they can't make a jump shot, like they'll overcompensate by making it the game where Noah Fernandes somehow only scores 2 points despite playing 38 minutes. So
yeah,
I just think that's the team they are. I think it solely comes down to, do they take advantage of those opportunities? Especially can they beat Dayton at home? Because I think Dayton outplayed them slightly last game and VCU had a little bit of luck at the end. So maybe that luck flips back in the other direction.
Yeah. I kind of agree with what you said. Their defense just gives them such a floor that I think they'll be safe against the worst teams in them. So,
I mean, their worst loss of the year is actually – so Wagner – at the time, I think a lot of people were laughing at VCU. They're 108th in KenPom. They're not too bad at all. Chattanooga is 59th. So those home games they dropped early actually against pretty quality teams. And
yeah,
I think that's a good point. Their defense does make it tough. For, I mean, a really, really bad team isn't just going to show up to the Siegel Center and drop 70. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
So I think but that does make them a safe
pick.
They'll
have to find a way to win 47-44, but
mm-hmm.
It seems like they can, yeah.
And like you said, Matt, you can make the case that every team they've lost to is probably either headed to the NCAA tournament or the NIT right now. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
I wanted to use your Vince Williams love to ask my question about who's your current first team All A-10? Because
he's
where I started. But then I went with Oduro. So far, the best big man in the A-10. I went with Luka Brajkovic. Just so steady and so consistent and efficient. 60% field goal shooting. He's actually the number two on KenPom. He's right behind Vince Williams right now. Then I went Jimmerson because St. Louis has impressed me. Sans Perkins. And he's especially seems like he's taken a leap, and now he's leading the A-10 in scoring. So I feel like the league's biggest bucket deserves a spot on the list. And then I went with Lee. I wanted to get another Davidson player in there, at least for where we're at right now, not projecting to where I think we'll be at the end of the season. But I kind of the Jimmerson logic, like he just fills it up. And I know Lawyer is really efficient, but I just think Davidson isn't an overly talented team when it comes to guys who can create their own shot and score from everywhere. And imagining them without Lee being able to do that seemed like a pretty big hit. So those are my five.
Yeah. Gosh, that's tough. Yeah, I haven't thought about this much. I think Williams for sure is my player of the year. Davidson's tough because all three of the guys you mentioned, you could make a case. And even Mike Jones is like the best role guy in the conference. Yeah. I wouldn't pick him as first team, but I like him a lot too. I think I'd go with Brajkovic for now. I might have to think about my other picks. Tyler, do you have any names that we haven't mentioned you want to throw out?
I was more just saying, like, is there anyone who I had that you objected with, I guess? Since you guys don't have your own list, maybe is there any egregious leave-offs for you right now?
So I will – good, because I was going to abstain from the question, and I'll do a shameless plug here. Coming at some point this week on the Busting Brackets website, the top – 30 players in the A-10 to this point in the season. So if I were to give my first team all conference, I'd probably give away that very dramatic last page that everyone's going to click to really fast. So
that we won't do that.
So they can get angry when they see a certain guy that I have in my top five. I already know what fan base is going to send me angry tweets. But every guy you've mentioned, I had on the top 10 of that list. And to me right now, it's basically a group of about eight that have kind of been in the discussion for player of the year so far. I'm trying to think of other guys that could be included.
Should I have had a Bonnie on there? I realize I don't have Lofton or Oshun or Welsh.
That's the big one for me is Oshun, who's putting up basically career best scoring and rebounding numbers in conference play. While still having his same level of excellent defense, he has to be in consideration for me. You already mentioned Lawyer. I think he's definitely up there somewhere. The only one that I would really object to is Hyungjoon Lee, who's just kind of taken a step back in conference play so far. But he's not too far off. I'd put him a tier down. And I'll actually pose a question to both of you as well. I'm looking at the all KenPom team. Can someone, and Noah Goldberg, if you're listening to this, like send us a message or something to explain it. Why is Greg Golden on the all KenPom team? I wouldn't even pick him first on his own team right now.
He's not been
as good as Gilliard.
He doesn't even have it. I was shocked. So Golden and Gilliard both don't have any triple nickels in the conference too.
That should automatically exclude them from the KenPom.
Well, that's their thing. I mean, that's what makes Grant Golden so good is that he was a longtime triple nickel machine. And if he's not doing that, that honestly says a lot. And honestly, I might get to it more later because I have a question about Richmond. But yeah, I don't understand that either.
While we're here, have you been keeping track of triple nickels? I wonder who gets to wear the Mr. Triple Nickel belt so far.
So actually, that's a good call. I counted those up this morning, sent a tweet out early. Jordan Hall looks like he could be running away with it. He's got six. And that's actually, if you're just into counting stats, like Jordan Hall, you could pick for first team. And I personally don't think I like it, but you could. But he's got six. Yuri Collins has four, which is also very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple guys with three. So, yeah, I don't know if I see anyone catching Jordan Hall, though. He's just putting up big box scores every night.
Hall's been really good. My logic with the first team thing is, like, the team needs to have it needs to be from a team with some juice. Not that Joe's doesn't have any juice, but not as much as other guys who would be deserving. It would have to be a special circumstance. Like, if he was averaging, like, 24, like, 9-4, like, something NBA numbers, maybe we can talk. But
yeah,
he's still close enough to the other guys we've been talking about.
But so one guy I want to add to this first team discussion on a team that has been playing really well, and, you know, you guys can both just stop me if I'm being a homer. This might be ridiculous.
If it's Deron, I forgot to mention him already.
Yeah, I think Deron Holmes.
He should be.
I think I'd pick him because Dayton has been insane on defense in conference. Yeah. They're ahead of VCU by a pretty big margin in conference play. A big reason for that is Deron Holmes, who just set the single season block record at the University of Dayton. And he's also been really good offensively. By the way. Yeah. I know I'm being a homer and I love watching him, but man, I think I'd have to pick him. He's just gotten better and better as the season's gone along.
Yeah.
So
that's fair. I thought about him. I just didn't know who I'd take off. But Lee, if we're just going off conference play numbers alone, is probably a fair pick to take off for him.
Yeah, I don't know. I think part of it with Holmes, like his counting stats, I don't have in front, but I think he's only averaging about 12 points and 6 rebounds.
It's weaker than the guys that Stu mentioned.
Right. But, I mean, that's kind of – I don't know. I feel like he's going to get that up over the course of the season. His scoring has gone up quite a bit in conference play, so we'll see what happens the rest of the way. But I feel like I have to pick him right now. He's just – his defense. Dayton hasn't had a rim protector like that the last couple of years, so that's been a big – a nice change for the Flyers.
If you ask me to give my team right now, he's not on it. Partially because of the glut of big men, because you basically have to justify him over at least one, if not two, of Brejkovic, Ashunahi, Aduro right now. But if you're asking me to project out and try to actually figure out what the six-man unit's going to be in March, I put him on there. Mm-hmm. And that was how I felt at the end of December, and that's how I feel even more strongly about that now. And also, let's take a real quick moment for a Power 8 hot take. 2023 A-10 Player of the Year, Deron Holmes. Congratulations.
If he's still in the A-10 by then, might be one and done.
He can't shoot well enough to go to the NBA right now. He's absolutely coming back next year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
He seems like the pick.
I mean, I don't even know if it's a hot take, to be honest with you. But we'll see. There's a lot of guys that could win it. All right. Tyler, are you going to get into your next question?
Yeah, that rolls into my first question. Who will be a kind of an offshoot of Stu's, but forward looking this time, who will be the best player in the conference over the next 6 weeks?
Mm.
And when you look back the last few years, with the exception of Obi Toppin 2 years ago, where he had already run away with basically every award, including possibly National Player of the Year at this point. The last few guys, Bones Highland, Marcus Evans, John Axel Goodmanson, they were all far from locks to be Player of the Year at this point. And most of them, I don't even think were the leader at the end of January. But they closed strong, they won the award, and carried their teams into the NCAA tournament. So who does that this year?
I'll take Williams, since we're already showing him love. I mean, the way VCU's trending and the way he's trending since the non-con, it's hard to not like him right now. And they're one of the hottest teams, probably the hottest team in the A-10. So I'll stick with my guy, V. Will. V. Dub. Who you got, Matt?
I tell you what. Well, I mean, so I'm tempted to just say Deron Holmes again, but I can't do that. All the non-Dayton fans are going to turn it off, so I don't want that to happen.
No, that's not crazy.
But it's honestly, one guy who's terrible. Yeah, I mean, it could happen, but another team that's been trending up a bit is George Mason, and I could see Josh Oduro continuing his ascent up the top of the leaderboards. I mean, you're looking at a guy that's one of the highest usage players in the conference, but he's still maintained really good efficiency throughout the season.
Mm-hmm.
And right now with George Mason too, looking at them, they've been one of the best offensive teams the last couple of weeks, leading the conference in effective field goal percentage. They just have a lot of different guys that can score, a lot of guys that can shoot. And I think Oduro is a big reason for that, just having a center that can stretch the floor out and pass the ball well.
Yeah, they're on double bye watch. They're 4-1.
Yeah, and I almost feel like with Mason, just they're on a nice 4-game winning streak. Their one loss in conference against GW was without Oduro. So I think he's going to be my pick. He's someone that I didn't give a whole lot of respect before the season. And I actually think, Stu, you might have been the one that had him way up the highest on our preseason rankings.
I had him 6, but we probably should have gone higher than that too.
I didn't have him on my list at all. So you got that one right for sure. At least more right than the rest of us.
There were enough that were stupidly wrong. Like I think none of the 5 that I just mentioned for first team, I think none of them were on that because it was like Lofton, Oshun, Gilliard, Golden, and Javonte Perkins. So here we are.
We'll have to get Tristan back on to make fun of him for picking Mustafa Amzil like 5th. I'm so bummed about.
He's not even 5th on his own team.
But all right, Oduro, though. I think that's my answer.
All right, I'll give mine, and then I got some rebuttals here. But I'm going to go with the simple pick. And to me, that's Luka Brajkovic. His last 7 games, points and rebounds. 17-8, 25-11, 13-11, 19-5, 21-and is he being lazy against Fordham? He only had one board. 23-12, 22-6.
Fordham was getting in his head. Did you see that game?
Well, Fordham was getting in his head until the last 8 minutes when every time he touched the ball, it was automatic that either he was scoring or somebody was hitting a wide open 3.
Yeah. Yeah. He was an automatic bucket at the end of that with his baby hooks.
Yeah, I don't think they had Chuba that game, and they really missed
him. They didn't, and my God, he was destroying those backups. But Stu just said it. He's the automatic bucket. He plays like it's 1981. He's absolutely not going to the NBA, but damn it if this guy isn't perfectly set for a college conference that isn't overloaded with crazy athletes, because here he can absolutely shine. And Davidson is going to keep getting him the ball in good spots because we've seen what happens this year. If you try to take him out, that's fine. Kyungjoon Lee or Mike Jones or Foster Lawyer is just going to kill you instead. And I think most teams at this point are content to just let Brajkovic try to shoot out of one-on-one post-ups then give guys open 3s because 2 is better for the defense than 3. He leads the conference in field goal percentage. He's getting to the line at a really nice rate. He's had at least 6 free throw attempts his last 5 games. His free throw numbers are slowly ticking up. He's up to 68% now, which is solid, if not above average for a center. And you know, I think you can pick him or Lawyer if you believe Davidson's going to win the conference, which at this point I do for the regular season. I just think he's the safest bet out of anything.
Yeah, I think that's a good call out. I mean, he's just been so consistent this season. And I think consistency is kind of what you could say about his entire career. But this year he's taken it to a next level and truly become a star. So,
and of all our picks, he probably has the highest floor as far as who's going to play the best, just because like his role on the team is just so steady and it's never like asking too much. He always plays within himself.
Yeah. Now that is that's a good pick, Tyler. Did you have any other, you said you had some rebuttals?
Yeah, I'll start because the Vince Williams thing, I think I kind of already spelled out my concerns with him earlier. I just don't think he's a number one offensive option, and that's why I wouldn't take him. Oduro, now maybe he doesn't win player of the year, even if he is the best guy, because I just don't think Mason's quite on the same level as some of these other teams. But the biggest thing for me is he needs to slow down on the fouling. picks up. Kim English trusts him with three fouls early in the second half against UMass this weekend, and he comes in and immediately gets his fourth foul, going after a pass near the half court line. Like, mm-hmm. this is like Michael Hughes level weird fouls. And Mason's biggest difficulty in conference play has been having to navigate multiple second halves without him to this point. He's been amazing when he's on the court, but he's just made some really bad decisions defensively that keeps getting him into this trouble.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a fair point. I think,
and even though they've looked good, there's still a chance they come back to earth with a first year coach. I mean, as good as he's been so far, that's always on the table at least.
Yeah. I think, you know, one other guy, if we're just looking at who's going to be the best player from today until the end of the year, I know we talked about them a bit earlier, but would it be that surprising if Kyle Lofton just went nuts and dragged St. Bonaventure to like second or third place? I mean, he won't have to do it all himself because he's got a lot of talent, but he is kind of the, you know, he's the match that lights the fire for St. Bonaventure. If he's not playing well, it's going to be tough for the rest of the team to win the games needed to make a run and maybe get to the tournament. So,
mm-hmm. Well, you say if he's not playing well, he quite frankly hasn't played well in conference play. This has been his worst month I can remember since probably his freshman year. And he's getting good shot looks, but you look at the St. Joe's game's perfect example. He's getting that foul line pull up that he likes so much. He's getting to the rim occasionally, and things just aren't falling for him. Mm-hmm. So you can very easily make the case that he doesn't have to change that much to step up. But to this point, he wouldn't even be in consideration for first team all conference at the moment. Mm-hmm. Now, if he closes that way, then with the way Ashunahi and Attaway are playing at the moment, I would say Bonaventure is absolutely somewhere in the 1-2-3 vicinity. And Lofton's the kind of guy that I would bet on. He's still playing, like I said, he's still playing his game. Things just aren't really working out the way they normally do. He's such a smart player that mm-hmm. I think he could have a huge bounce back February.
Yeah. Yeah, I was saying before, like, do you trust Mark Schmidt to make them top four? But I trust Schmidt and I trust Lofton. So I think mm-hmm. as a whole team, they'll figure it out. Not that they're playing poorly, but figure it out on a level of dominance.
So one guy that we haven't really mentioned at all for this first team discussion, and this will go into my next question, Tyler Burton is someone that we talked about a bunch earlier on. He was like the player of the non-conference, one of the best shooters in the league, and he's really dropped off, only averaging 9.8 points over his last six games. My question really is, can he get back on track to a point where Richmond – I mean, the ship has sailed. Like, I don't think they're getting a double bye. They're certainly not getting an at-large bid. But can he start playing well enough where they're a threat at the A-10 tournament? Because right now, I would say Richmond is not a threat to win. They just – they're not good enough offensively. They can't score. And we know they can't really defend, so.
I can't envision being scared of them. I don't know what they'd have to do to change. Like, I think they're – I think we know who they are by now. You know, I mean, there was a question of, do we know who they are with Burton as their best player? But by this point, like, whatever that is still not very scary. And I don't know what they'd have to change to become like, oh, watch out for them in DC, you know. At least more than a top six type of thinking.
Right, and I think we knew all along, too, with Richmond. Like, we knew they weren't going to be a great defensive team. I think, you know, some of us had hoped they would at least be pretty good, and they really aren't. But
yeah,
for them to reach the ceiling that everyone thought maybe they could reach at the beginning of the season, they would have to have the offense that Davidson has, where they've got all these shooters, all these scorers. And right now, they're actually – it's crazy. They're dead last in the A-10 in three-point percentage in conference play, so – Richmond's dead last, VCU's first. Go figure. That makes a lot of sense.
And defensively, Richmond is dead last and VCU's first.
Right.
So it's actually the same on both ends.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think Burton's going to get better. Like, I don't think he's going to average 10 points a game the rest of the season, but even then, like, I don't think Gilliard and Golden are performing quite up to their standards. Gilliard's had a couple really good games.
I think Gilliard is.
He is, but
Golden's not.
The rest of the team needs to step it up.
And yeah.
Yeah, their offense, unless it gets back to where it's like second or third best in the A-10 and they can just get to a point where you could maybe see Richmond having a couple hot shooting nights in a row in D.C., that's the only way it can happen. And right now, there's no chance unless things get better in a hurry.
And by the way, we'll have our answer before they go in. So their next five, or I guess let's go next seven. They're at Duquesne. Woof. They better win that game. Mm-hmm. Home for Bonaventure, home for Mason, at Mason, home for LaSalle, at VCU, at GW. So it's time for them to rattle off a quick 5-2, maybe even 6-1, because then they close with SLU, Dayton, Bonaventure, the last three. So really, if they're going to fix anything, because right now, if they keep playing the way they are, I'm not even sure that they would win like a 6-11 game against a St. Joe's level team. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they better run over just some of these crap teams that they play and then play tough to close out the regular season. I just don't see it. It's broken. They'll hold themselves to a respectable point, because even though they've lost the Burton awesome performance hero ball, they kind of got some good hero ball from Gilliard instead, who's basically mm-hmm. taken over Burton's scoring. But like, the passing's just not there. They're not really running a Princeton offense at this point anymore. And the reason they're not getting anything from the rest of their team is because the best guys just aren't moving the ball the way they used to.
Mm-hmm. The last three games that you mentioned are interesting, because they could, like, if they play well, they could enter as like red hot into DC, or they could be looking really juicy if they go cold over that stretch to like a 10 seed. You know, it's hard to see them like just looking like solid. You know, either they come out of that feeling good or ripe for the picking.
All right, I don't think I have too much else on Richmond, because otherwise it's just gonna bum me out. I just feel bad. Like, they've had so many tough losses to deal with this year. I mean, that VCU game, just a hard fought, had a shot to win it at the end that didn't drop. I don't know. I still want to believe. And like, I still don't like how a lot of people say like, oh, I knew all along Richmond was going to be bad this year. Like, I don't think that's fair either. They had so much offensive potential and it just hasn't worked out. So we'll see.
Even the people who were down on them hedged and just put them like third, maybe fourth. So,
yeah.
Because that's basically what I did. I just hedged. I think I had them fourth in my preseason predictions. But, I mean, I was down on them to start the year. I never thought it would get this bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had them five, and that was like – I thought I was being like revolutionary. It's like – because like it seemed like the lowest people really went, but like nobody didn't have them double by, so I was trying to throw some hot takes in there, but yeah, there's still time though.
All right,
have we all asked two?
It's my second one here.
Oh, okay,
so for me, I will go outside of really the, because there's six, let's be honest, there's six pretty solid teams right now. It's looking at the top of this conference, and then Richmond and Rhodey right below them. We've talked about five of them pretty solidly. The other one is St. Louis. So I guess my question is, what does this team look like come March? Right now, it's a Yuri Collins distribute the ball around to everybody with Gibson Jimerson, I guess basically just playing like Javonte Perkins.
Mm-hmm.
As their offensive system. I don't think that's enough for them to win big games in March, but there's a lot of ways that they can get better. The Jordan Nesbitt thing still just hasn't clicked big in the way that St. Louis Twitter wants you to believe it will. I think Francis Okoro's been pretty good so far this year, but the numbers just don't fully bear it out other than the fact that he is an elite rebounder nationally. So I guess I'm basically wondering two parts. A, can Jimmerson keep this up? I say that he can. And then B, who's the other piece here? Is it Nesbitt? Is it Okoro? Is it maybe even a healthy Martin Lindzen?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. So far, it seems like in conference, it's mostly been the Collins and Jimmerson show. But I do think they're going to need a reliable third option. Early in the year, it was Lindzen, but I know he's been hurt for a while. Fred Thatch has had a couple big games, but he's not really a consistent offensive threat. And then someone like Jordan Nesbitt, I know like he's got the potential to be great, but he's been a little bit boom or bust this year.
He looked good against UMass.
Yeah. So, I mean, he could get there by the end of the season, and maybe that's the guy you look toward, kind of like, you know, how we talked about Deron Holmes as a freshman. Maybe Nesbitt can be that guy that by the end of the season, he's a completely different player than when he started the season at St. Louis. So,
yeah,
they're going to need someone else as well as Gibson Jimmerson has been playing this year. I mean, he's averaging, I think, 22 a game in conference. I don't see him realistically doing any better than that. And Yuri Collins is leading the nation in assists still. So he's, I don't know how much better he can be doing distributing the ball. So they are going to need a third option that can consistently give them, you know, 12 points a game. Or
somebody's going to have to get hot at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
Like somebody's going to have to separate themselves, like, late February, early March, if they haven't already before that. Because right now it's just like they have the two big guys and then like four or five guys that alternate being the number three. But if I had to pick a guy, I think maybe I'm biased because I saw him absolutely destroy my team, but Nesbitt just athletically and just as a pure basketball player just seems like he has the tools. So I think he'll keep figuring it out.
Nesbitt's the ceiling guy. I mean, and by the way, the one guy we haven't mentioned is Terrence Hargrove. And I stand by my statement on the pod I did with Chris Pyle a few weeks ago that he is my candidate for a Mike Jones against Richmond level game late in the season, where he either single-handedly vaults Slew into a double buy or single-handedly knocks someone else out of that spot.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I'm taking Okoro. I think he can be basically kind of a young Hassan French for this team already. He's rebounding the ball like a maniac. He's finally starting to get his scoring going. He had 22 against GW, which isn't the greatest accomplishment in the world against that front line, especially without Lindo. But then put up 14 on 7 of 9 shooting against Duquesne. He had 16 in the UMass game that they lost. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to start seeing that Francis Okoro more down the stretch than the guy who was putting up basically kind of 8.5 points a game before that. By the way, he's shooting 57% from the field this year too. So
yeah, he's got a nice touch. He doesn't look like he would have nice touch, but he's surprisingly, he's got finesse, you know, that you wouldn't expect to see.
And zero career 3-point attempts through three seasons. Mm-hmm. Round of applause for a center who can't shoot threes, not trying to shoot threes.
That's like a unicorn these days. Like a center that, like, everybody takes. Nelson Bochy-Edom popped a three over the weekend and made it against LaSalle. I mean,
Ashun doesn't shoot him either. And as an aside, I've decided my resolution for the final month, I will stop yelling at my TV when Brajkovic shoots threes. Because
he's pretty good.
He's so great in the post that it makes me mad that he does it frequently, but he's shooting somewhere around 40% in conference play, so I guess it's working.
I'm still going to yell when Tumani Kamara pops a three.
Yeah, like, that is 100% still acceptable.
I could live without those. But yeah, no, that is interesting. Not many guys left that will refuse to take a three.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's interesting, but no, I mean, he is. I think Okoro, Like, he got off to maybe a slow start to the season where I don't even think he was starting, actually. They had Lindsen as the primary center for a while.
Lindsen getting hurt is the only reason he got into the starting lineup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, I mean, I think we all had high hopes for him going into the season. And, I mean, just watching him play, clearly he's got to be one of the most athletic players in the conference, like a Hassan French, where he can just bully other teams around the post. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, that's been a key to St. Louis's success over the years, is just being the more physical team. And I think if they want to do that, he's the right personnel to have.
Yeah, he's of that, like, rebounding, defending, and trying to win ugly mm-hmm. mold, you know, that they've been known for lately.
Also, too, defensively, St. Louis has gotten a little bit better in conference play. They're third in the league in defensive efficiency right now, a little bit up from where they were in the non-conference. So I know Okoro is a big part of that as well, one of the mm-hmm. better defensive centers in the conference. So.
All right, so we've knocked out 6 of our 10 questions. We have not talked too much about the teams in New England, New York City, Philadelphia. Those have been kind of problem areas for the A-10, but there's still some good basketball being played there by another fun mid-major conference. And we're going to take a quick moment to tell you about the Ivy League Hoops Hour. Tune in for your source for all things men's basketball in the Ancient Eight. Hosted by Coach Sidney Johnson, who is the former head coach of the Princeton Tigers from 2007 to 2011, and his co-host and former grad assistant Lawrence Schuler, you'll hear from student athletes and coaches on their experiences and perspectives on competing in the Ivy League, issues that challenge Ivy League athletes, and analysis on the teams and players from Coach Johnson. All of this in spite of Lawrence's best efforts to deconstruct the whole thing. We invite you to listen to the Ivy League Hoops Hour podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you consume your podcast content. And you know what? We all got plenty of time during the week. You got time to listen to the A-10 and the Ivy League. I know we do. So very good mid-major pod. Give that a listen. Stu, what's your third question?
I'll follow that incredible plug by asking, I was going to ask which player that you didn't have on your top 20 did you most regret not having? And mine is Vince Williams, if we haven't talked about him enough. But I'll ask another one too, because that's such a quick answer. So I'll throw in a UMass question with, do you think, which way would you bet right now? UMass is playing on Wednesday in D.C. or not?
I think Wednesday, I'm sorry to say, but I don't know. I mean, they just – there have been so many games this year where they're just not really competitive, like going to that George Mason game today. Yeah. And their offense and their three-point shooting makes them fun to watch, and it's entertaining any night, but their defense is down to 340th in the nation, which
– that's a tough scene.
Yeah, it's just – it's gotten worse and worse over the season, and I don't know if it's bottomed out or what, but looking at their schedule, they still got to play Rhodey again. They've got Bonaventure, Dayton, VCU, Mason again. They've got a kind of tough schedule, it seems like.
Yeah.
The thing that helps them out, I mean, there are still some other very bad teams. I mean, LaSalle and Duquesne both have 1 win apiece right now, so I think UMass is a good chance to finish ahead of those teams.
That's part of my thinking, is that, like, as poorly as they've looked, like, can they be the least bad of the bad teams, because there are still a fair amount. There's LaSalle, Duquesne, and then they're kind of in the mix right now, right above those teams with GW, Fordham, St. Joe's. And even if you, like, think UMass should be a Wednesday team, it's like there are plenty of worlds where some of those teams find a way to finish below them.
You know what? I'm actually looking at it again. I'm going to pick UMass to finish 10th, I think, just without thinking about the other teams, because they get GW, St. Joe's, Fordham, and LaSalle all at home. And UMass is like you said, they're pretty good at home usually.
Yeah.
If they just win those games, I mean, those are going to be big for tiebreaker implications too.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I'm actually going to say they win those home games because usually that's what UMass does. Most of their bad losses are on the road. So
yeah,
you know what? I'll be optimistic. I'll say they finish 10th.
There we go.
So first of all, the guy I missed in my top 20, it's Josh Aduro. I could throw in Brekovic too, but
also Foster Lawyer. Like, I didn't have him.
I don't count the Foster Lawyer thing. That dude sucked at Michigan State, and I still don't understand how.
Yeah,
he's like, I watch him, and I don't understand how he wouldn't be good on any team in the nation. But no, the biggest reason is Aduro basically told us in February last year that he was going to be an all-conference player this season. And because of that, he was my first honorable mention. And I basically just declared that I thought that there was flukiness to that. There wasn't. Mm-hmm. He is an unstoppable low post scorer. So that one I just missed. As for UMass, I had a full kind of little crazy scenario in my head until I just, like Matt, pulled up the schedule. They have so many cupcakes. Fernandes and Rich Kelly are just simply better than Fordham's guards, than LaSalle's guards. I would pick them over GW's guards. And if they get all those games at home, they're going to pull it out. The thing that they better damn well do is beat Fordham at home that last week of the season, because that's the kind of team that they could end up losing a tiebreaker to. Like, right now, their biggest threat to falling into the top four is if they tie for 10th with Duquesne, and blowing that home game at the beginning of January sticks them into the pillow fight.
Duquesne's a team where, like, I didn't think they'd be good, but I didn't think they'd be are they 1-6 now or 1-7?
They're 1-5.
Oh, 1-5? Just the eye test, they don't look as bad as their record. Like, they look like they have some guys. At least the games I've tuned in for, like Jackie Johnson, Primo Spears, all look pretty good.
They do, but one thing that they don't have is assists.
Yeah.
They have now fallen to 8th to last in college basketball in assist percentage.
Wow.
Although the guys over at West Pine Bills informed us that Yuri Collins had a triple nickel at halftime of the St. Louis Duquesne game the other day. A game that I was hoping that no one realized was going on. And at the time, as I replied back, Duquesne themselves did not have a triple nickel as a team. Collins had 6 assists. Duquesne had 4.
Did he end up ahead of them for the game too? It wouldn't surprise
me. You keep talking while I dig that up.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either. But
Collins is going to set it like an unbeatable assist mark at St. Louis.
He could. I actually think, wasn't there I could be wrong on this, so I apologize. I thought I saw an article where he was talking about maybe using his COVID year too. So if he played 5 years, like, he could set some Jacob Gilliard record with assists. That would be unbeatable. And the VCU fans probably won't like that one either. But anyway, Tyler, I saw you chuckling. What did you find?
Collins, in that game, Yuri Collins had 10 assists. The rest of the St. Louis players combined for 8. Duquesne had 7.
Oh. Man,
tough battle.
Five for the 2 freshman guards and 2 for the rest of the team.
Yeah, I didn't watch that game at all, but I don't know. I mean, I know, like, we all know from the last couple of years that Keith Dambrot has had Travis Ford's number. So when I saw that was a 24.1.
Marcus Weathers had Travis Ford's number.
Yeah, that's it. Because no Weathers, and they just – that was a rough one for Duquesne. So I knew something was different.
Yeah, maybe the St. Louis SMU NIT game is going to be a doozy when Weathers drops 30 on them again.
Oh, man. That would be, yeah. Well, he already owned Dayton again this year, so, or no, he didn't. It was his brother.
Yeah, it was Michael Weathers.
Other one, yeah. Anyway, All right, well, I got a question about another brother of a well-known A-10 player, and that is Malachi Smith, who I think you could say he's maybe fallen on some hard times the last couple games. Maybe he's hit the freshman wall, but really my question is, can Malachi be playing well enough offensively by the end of the year that Dayton can win the A-10 tournament? Because right now, as good as Dayton is defensively, he's just been having a couple rough games. He went 0-for-8 from the field against Rhode Island. George Mason, he had an insane defensive game, but it seemed like he got his shot blocked about 5 or 6 times. And really just across the board, his statistics have gone down the last couple weeks. So
I still think the answer to your question is yes, though, just because Dayton, like, since there's no real, like, incredible teams this year, just like, mm-hmm. some really solid ones, like a pack of six, like we've been talking about. Dayton is always going to be in games. Like, they're always going to be like, oh, they could take this one. And so I think he's just going through a little bit of a slump. I like him to find it and heat up at the right time.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I think with Dayton, you are right on that. Their two conference losses to VCU and Mason are by 1 point each, so.
Yeah.
Very close to being undefeated in the league.
It turns out Mason is like a team you're actually allowed to lose to these days too.
Yeah, especially on the road, I would say. Yeah. But the other piece of the puzzle you have to consider is just how bad Dayton is in the A-10 tournament every year, which maybe having a brand new team, these guys haven't experienced the heartbreak.
Maybe that like the freshman overconfidence too of like, exactly what you're saying. They haven't experienced the bad. Like, maybe that'll be actually a strength and they'll just go in like feeling themselves. So yeah, I like Mally though. I think he's that dude and he'll play like that dude.
Yeah.
It's a yes, because point guard instincts and determination don't go away. Shooting ebbs and flows. I think he'll figure it out. He's hit that kind of rough point in your freshman season where now there's enough film in conference games that opposing coaches can do a much better job of game planning for a young player. And so now we're just about hitting that time where he can start to adjust. And this week he gets VCU for the second time. So that's going to be a very, very interesting game for him. Mike Rhodes has got plenty of film on what to do, and he's got a healthy Ace Baldwin. So now I think Malachi kind of knows what's going to get thrown at him. If he doesn't react correctly, he's going to have a bad game, and they're almost certainly going to lose. So we'll see what he does, but I think by March he'll be fine.
Yeah, I feel like part of the issue, just watching the last few games, he's started attempting a lot more field goals every game, and I think he just needs to let the game come to him a little bit more. At the beginning of the season, we quickly figured out he's one of those guys that doesn't need to score to have good games, and I think it was that GW game where he didn't have any points and had one of the best halves you could ask for from a point guard. But it just feels like he's been forcing it a little bit too much, so I'd like to see him just set up his teammates more. Go back to that St. Bonaventure game where he had 12 assists. I mean, that's obviously not going to happen every night, but I think Dayton, even though they're not like a great shooting team, they still have enough guys where nobody on the court's really an offensive liability, where if he can just get them the ball and set up his teammates, then that would be the best way for them to win.
Figure out what you have to do on a night-by-night basis.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now I don't know. Maybe I just ask that so I could feel better about Dayton, but we'll see. I'm still not feeling good about the A-10 tournament because I never do, but got a month to worry about that.
You're feeling better than I am, if it's any consolation.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Dayton with the longest streak in the league since their last A-10 tournament win.
Really?
Wait, who won last year? We beat Rhode Island on Thursday.
Or are those numbers from...
Oh, that game. Yep, that game was... That was just a stupid game that I forgot happened, so...
Yeah, because Dayton and Duquesne both snapped, like, 6 years
streaks. Which means the longest streak's, like, 2 or 3 years now. So now it's just kind of not a fun stat.
Gotta be Fordham.
If that was true going into last year's tournament, though, that's still surprising for Dayton.
Yeah, it was... It was a bad streak.
Yeah, they lost back-to-back years as a one seed to the 5 seed and the 8 seed. So,
yeah.
Well, not going to worry about being the 1 seed this year, probably. Although, never know. I mean, it's still alive. not mathematically eliminated.
Yeah.
So, all right.
All right.
Tyler, what's your
Speaking
last
of the current 1 seed, my final question, because we have talked just shockingly little about Davidson in this episode. So I'll go player specific here. What do we expect from Hyungjoon Lee come March? I think even if he continues to play kind of blah through February, they'll still be good the way that Brejkovic, Lawyer, and Michael Jones are all playing at the moment. But ever since halftime of the first VCU game where Mike Rhodes comes out and has Ace Baldwin just chase Hyungjoon Lee around the court so severely that I think Ace might have gone into the Davidson locker room for 10 minutes after and just kept following Lee around until somebody finally got him to go home. But you include that game, last 4 for Hyungjoon, 3 for 16 from three-point lane. Now, his last 2 games, he's been starting to get to the line a little bit more. 8 free throw attempts against VCU the second time, 8 against LaSalle. But the shooting numbers are just not that great in conference play for the second straight year. So I'm not concerned about the next week or two, but come March, when it's the A-10 semifinal, when it's the A-10 final, when it's the first round of the NCAA tournament, what's he going to bring to the table?
I had to look at his game logs for last year to see if he's had streaks like this. He did have a patch last year of like 6 or 7 games where he was at like 7, 8, 8, 7, 9, like every night and not shooting efficiently, like 0 for 3 from 3, 0 for 5, 2 for 7, 2 for 5. I guess 2 for 5 solid, but overall not looking good. So I think if you combine the fact that he's kind of streaky, because after that he found it, he was all pretty much all double digits after that the rest of the way, and that he's on a really good team this year with the best coach in the league, I think that'll all trend in the direction of him being able to figure things out without feeling like, you know, we're not gonna win if I don't drop 30 and taking horrible shots. I think he's in the right place and in the right situation to settle down and do what he needs to do.
Yeah, I'm not worried. I mean, his 2 recent games against the first VCU game and then Fordham was only 2 of the year, less than 10 points. And I mean, honestly, to me, the fact that he hasn't been playing as well in conference makes me feel even better about Davidson, because they've gotten to first place through the strengths of their other guys. And if Lee gets back to where he was in the non-conference, that just makes them even more difficult to beat. So I honestly feel even more scared of Davidson, looking at the fact that Lee's only averaging around 12 or 13 points a game in the conference.
Yeah. And he's just so skilled, like just eye test, like you just know you're watching a pro. And it's just like, when I think of Hyungjoon Lee, like my brain just thinks more like, of the good player, oh, that's who that is. You know, that's who he is. You know, like it's hard for me to bank on him being like, to bank on the situation where this slump continues. You know, I almost have to think that he'll figure it out.
And I think part of it too for Davidson and for Lee is I think the situation's changed a little bit throughout the season. We're going into the year, first couple weeks, you know, you look at their teams like no Kellen Grady, no Carter Collins, no Bass Jones, like somebody's got to be that go-to guy and score a ton of points and fill that void. And we thought it was going to be Lee, but as it turns out, now we get to this point, Luca, Foster Lawyer, and Michael Jones are all having really good offensive seasons too. So maybe I feel like that doesn't make it quite as important for Lee, where even if he continues averaging 13 points a game or whatever it is, like that might be enough for Davidson. He doesn't need to force bad shots because he's got so much help.
I almost wonder, if we get to the bigger games, can he continue to put up this slightly lower scoring output on a little bit less in terms of shots attempted? Because I think teams are going to just keep throwing their best perimeter defender at him. Mm-hmm. Although once we get to like an A-10 tournament game, it's going to be tougher to game plan much more past that when you only have about 22 hours to figure out how you want to handle Davidson's lethal offense.
Yeah.
And so I think if Hyungjoon Lee can continue to score 13 points on 10 shots instead of 13, while just kind of letting the rest of the offense flow through as he pulls the best defender away from everyone else, then I think that's a worthy contribution. Mm-hmm. And that's the pathway to Davidson potentially getting into the second round of the A-10 tournament, maybe even making it to the Sweet 16.
Yeah. Yeah, teams, like you were saying, with the limited time, like teams will be able to highlight him a little bit, but really they're game planning for Bob McKillop, not Hyungjoon Lee. So that'll bode well for him.
All right. And so we wrap this up with our 10th and final question. This is specifically for Stu. Where does UMass go the rest of this season? They got 2 wins in conference. They're sitting in 12th. And at this point, is the best case scenario, maybe you find your way into the 8-9 game, you get a win there at noon on Thursday, or are we even trending towards the point that maybe you just finish 12th and just clean house at the end of the season? Because I got to say, like that arena has been bumming me out this year. It looks so empty every time they're on TV.
I don't know if we can have both situations where, like, we win the cupcake games the rest of the way, the ones you were talking about that we have at home against other bottom four contenders, you know, win a game in the A-10 tournament. I don't know what it's going to take for Matt McCall to get fired, if we can do all those things, or if we have to have a disastrous year for that to happen, because I'm not as hip to the fiscal situation and what it would take to buy him out. But I'm still pulling for us to avoid, my new goal is just avoid the bottom four, you know, play your first game on Thursday and see what happens. If that makes Matt McCall look good, so be it. I want to win basketball games in DC. I'm never going to really root against that, even if it probably is for the good of my future. But yeah, within the fan base, people basically consider McCall cooked at this point. So, and I'm not sure what the long-term outlook of this team is, but at this point, I'm not really sure I care. Like, just thinking about, oh, would so-and-so stay? Like, I mean, what has it gotten us if they do, you know? I mean, I want to keep guys like Noah and TJ. You know, TJ bleeds UMass because his dad went here. Noah's already transferred, so he wouldn't have the play right away. But beyond that, I'm kind of ready to clean house. Even the good version of what this is, I don't know if it's good enough. So I got one eye towards the future, Tyler.
Head coach Tony Bergeron?
Hey, you're
not the first to say it, but it's not happening. But yeah, I've heard Tony Bergeron, Rick Pitino. Yeah, all the names have been thrown out there.
I mean, well, Pitino's an alum, so that one would be amazing.
Although I think he cost $10 million to buy out or something like that.
I mean, I'm still, even though I'd be torn, but for my own, like, entertainment purposes, I'd love to see Archie Miller go to UMass back in the A-10.
Me too.
I don't know if that's realistic. I mean, probably not. He can probably get a low end Power 5 job.
Yeah.
But
it depends on whether or not Pitt's stupid enough to not give him their job.
How about?
Because I still fully believe that if he gets offered an ACC job in his hometown, he's going to take it. So
let me pose this question. Chris Mooney to UMass.
I'm good. I'm ready for no, like, maybe I shouldn't be. I was hoping for like a Jared Grasso or like, from Bryant or Joey Gallo from Merrimack, like somebody young. But I mean, we just went with somebody young and it didn't work out very well. Like, McCall was 29-6 at Chattanooga, regardless of what guys it was with, the former coach or not. But like,
Maybe we should go the older, more established guy trying to reinvent himself. But Mooney's just not that version of that. So I'm good.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't sell a fired coach in your own conference. I don't know. Maybe Don Brown can save UMass basketball too. So
yeah.
But that does it for our 10 questions. Once again, a thank you to our guest, Stu Ledecky. Stu, you got anything that the people can follow out there?
Yeah, these days I'm mainly on Twitter, S Ledecky, SLUDDECKE93. I sometimes write for Busting Brackets, though since new fatherhood 6 months ago, that's been very limited. I'll probably get back to it maybe as we head down the stretch, but yeah, mainly on Twitter. So throw me a follow and let's chop it up about A10 hoops.
Yeah, we made it over an hour here. No child disturbances, no need for you to go and help your wife out with the child. So yeah, shout out to your little daughter for respecting the sanctity of the podcast recording.
Yep.
She gets a tiny MVP trophy for today.
Hell yeah. Thanks, boys.
And a thank you not only to Stu, but to all of our listeners. If you guys enjoy the pod, as always, please leave us 5 stars and a comment on iTunes. Everybody, just enjoy the remainder of this season. We are just about to hit the home stretch here. I can feel the heat of the DC sidewalks already starting to come. March is almost here. Everybody, enjoy the next month.